Hello and welcome to Total Football Analysis La Liga podcast, where we are joined this week by Scott Martin at Coach Scott Coppy on Twitter. Say hi, Scott.
Hey, everyone. Welcome to the podcast.
And also by DK at Barca Front on Twitter.
Hey, guys. How are you doing?
And so today we'll be looking at some of the key topics in La Liga, some of the best performances and the best tactical trends from across some of the league's biggest teams, some of the surprises, some of the key players as well. So let's get stuck straight in to one of the best performances from a Liga team that we've seen in a while in Europe, with Atletico Madrid's display against Liverpool in the Champions League. DK, what did you think?
Well, I think that this was like a classic Simeone game. 1-0 victory for the boys from Madrid. This will be definitely be huge for the tie, and it's probably not something that everyone expected going into the game. I think that pretty much everyone just thought that Liverpool were going to run them over and then take over the tie. So, but there was an early goal, which basically decided the whole clash. So what do you guys think? Was it just luck on Atletico's side, or was it, you know, something else?
You know, like you said, this was classic Simeone. I don't think it was luck. I think it was a credit to the team's willingness to commit to that low block. Their focus and mentality, the fight they showed over 90 minutes. You know, as you watch this game, it was so rare to see the Atletico Madrid lines become undone. The organization was fantastic. Liverpool really didn't have anything right down the middle. The two banks of four from Atletico just took that away. And so, you know, as Liverpool progressed into the attacking third, you know, you saw even the forwards drop in, get behind the ball. There was just no route to goal. So, I mean, very compact defending, typically about 10 meters between the lines. And the way they move side to side was, like you said, it was classic. This is exactly what you would expect from a Simeone team. And, you know, even though Liverpool came into this tie as the favorites, and, you know, I think a lot of people were predicting them to come away with some kind of a result, you know, this Atletico team is just a nightmare draw for anyone in a two-leg tie. You know, they're not the team you want to pick up in the draw.
Yeah, that's definitely true. So Sam, do you see actually Atletico Madrid progressing from this point, or is Klopp going to do some miracles and, you know, turn the tie around at Anfield?
I'm still not too optimistic for Atletico. I mean, I think the thing is that, I mean, like Scott said, it was not luck so much, but in a way it was lucky that they got that goal so early on. I mean, 4 minutes in to score the goal, which was kind of the perfect part of Simeone's game plan. It meant they could sit back and defend that deep, and they didn't have to have any kind of attacking intent, which is probably exactly what Simeone would have hoped for over the two legs. So it's given them the perfect platform. But then, I mean, I couldn't help but think about the tie at this round last year, where they played against Juventus and they won the first leg 2-0 at the Wanda Metropolitano. And you were thinking, Atletico Madrid, if there's one team that knows how to defend the lead, it's Atletico Madrid. And even going to Turin, even going up against Cristiano Ronaldo, they can keep that. And they're not going to concede three goals. And then obviously they did. So up against Liverpool, up against Salah, up against Mane, I mean, again, very strong attacking players, a team that don't struggle to score goals. I mean, this was only the second time under Klopp that they failed to have a shot on target. And so you really have to wonder whether Atletico will be able to keep them out like that again. It's not something that happens very often. They managed it on Tuesday night, but it's not something that's very frequent. And even Diego Simeone might have his work cut out if he's going to replicate that performance at Anfield again. And obviously, looking at the comments in the press and things from the Liverpool players, the Liverpool staff, they weren't too happy about some of the attitudes from Atletico, so they're certainly going to be motivated and have a point to prove.
Yeah, that's true. And speaking of Mane and Salah, Klopp did this, let's call it weird tactical move. He took off both of them, so both of his main attackers, basically. So do you guys think that this was something that suited Simeone in the end, or was it something that changed, that you know, kind of pushed the game towards Liverpool a bit more?
Yeah. You know, it does seem odd, but I think that did push momentum in Liverpool's favor. And you'd see that once Salah came off, I think for the last 20 minutes, Liverpool, created their best chances of the game. And, when you look at the standard Liverpool lineup, when you've got Mane on the right or the left, Salah on the right, there's always that emphasis for getting them isolated, getting them 1v1, letting them run at defenders or running behind. But that's not going to work against Atletico. So especially once they got that first goal, they had really no incentive to go forward and really risk anything in the attack. So I think Liverpool did have to find another way. Their typical route to goal, it just wasn't available. So I think bringing on Origi was a good call. And, Sam, you mentioned the tie against Juventus. Cristiano Ronaldo is a very different attacker than, anything Liverpool has. And so, you can play him the kind of balls that you're probably not going to play Salah, Mane. And even Firmino, he's not going to, be the guy in the box who can really outmuscle these Atletico defenders. So yeah, it was a very interesting tactical switch, but I do think it was necessary, and I think it produced their best chances.
It was interesting as well with Firmino to see kind of the role that he played last night, because he dropped very deep at times, and obviously you're looking at him and he always kind of drops into that kind of false nine role and drops to join in and attack and link up with midfield. But then on Tuesday night, it was quite surprising just how deep he was dropping. It definitely left the two wingers isolated in the first half and they didn't have much space to run into. But then in the middle, there wasn't too much of a threat either, because Firmino was so deep, and then kind of left Jordan Henderson to be the attacking man. And when you got a team with so many strong attacking players like the players that Jurgen Klopp has in that Liverpool squad, you should never really be counting on Jordan Henderson as your talisman in attack.
Yeah, I definitely agree. And, that inability to break lines really hurt them. You could see Firmino really trying to drop in on, I think especially in the first half, you were seeing Liverpool trying to sit in between those two banks of four and receive in that area. But first, the passes just weren't there. Second, if they were able to get those passes off, they were at such a depth that the Liverpool backline or the Atletico backline was able to step forward and get a foot on the ball, put in a tackle, and really prevent any kind of danger from resulting. So, yeah, it was just a brilliant and classic Simeone performance. And, I think ultimately Liverpool pulls this out, but they're really going to have to figure out how to score against this Atletico team. They move so well horizontally, diagonally, vertically. There was just no space to penetrate the middle of the field.
Another point as well, which I bring up, is with the Atletico attack, because you think about this and you think about kind of the system and the structure and how rigid it is, but then you think, right, so that means that there's definitely kind of the Diego Costa figure who kind of pulls the ball up and things, but I don't think Alvaro Morata did that role particularly well. I don't think he had a great game. I don't think the Atletico attackers did that great a job. They didn't really hold the ball up as well as Diego Simeone would have liked, but the defensive strength kind of made up.
So does Costa get the start in the next leg?
Yeah, well, coming back from injury, it'll be interesting to see how much he features leading up to that second leg, but I wouldn't be surprised to see him start. Angel Correa obviously had a great game as well and kind of brought a bit more energy into attack. But with Morata, you never know. He can either be the player who makes the difference or the player who misses a great chance like he did on Tuesday when he kind of tripped himself up inside the box and it could have been the moment that settled the tie. But with the Atletico strikers, you can never count too much on anyone.
Yeah, Atletico had more chances than Liverpool, more clear-cut chances at least. They could have put the game to bed like two or three times. Morata with that chance, that was a golden opportunity. And then Costa also had one by the end of the game. And I feel like if they're going to progress, it's probably going to have to take an away goal to seal the deal, maybe against a run of play, maybe do something like that. But that's the thing with Atletico the whole season. They've been pretty good defensively, as they always are. They have the second best defense in La Liga, just behind Real Madrid. But they just cannot seem to score goals. That's one issue that's been plaguing Simeone this season. It's only 25 goals from 24 games in La Liga. That's just not enough. But they are creating chances. So what seems to be the problem there?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's something as well, because, I mean, obviously looking into who will come out on top in the second leg, I think that's kind of the major factor. Is I'm not entirely convinced that Liverpool will score two against Atletico, but I'm fairly confident that Atletico won't score at Anfield. I mean, if they manage that, then they should be the team to go through. If they don't, then Liverpool have definitely got a fighting chance. But I mean, it's very much been the tale of Atletico's season, kind of the way that they've had kind of struggles to bring that creativity out in midfield and then to link that up with the attack. I mean, they've got plenty of players in there who have that ability. I mean, Thomas Lamar, Coquelin, Saul, who kind of can create chances, can have chances themselves. But then in attack, they just haven't had that link-up play. João Felix has taken a while to settle in. Alvaro Morata has been in and out of form. Diego Costa's had his injury. So they really just kind of lack that striker who they can rely on in attack.
Yeah, and you saw that play out last night. They really could have put this thing to bed if not for a couple of blunders from Morata. But, you know, even despite the lack of quality finishing, one thing that surprised me in this game was how comfortable both defenses, well, maybe not surprised, but one thing that stood out was how comfortable both defenses were. Atletico won the XG battle with a 0.72 versus Liverpool 0.47. So, you know, not a whole lot of great chances in this one. But, you know, aside from those, what, three random counterattacks against the run of play, the Liverpool back line was very comfortable. I mean, I don't see Atletico getting a goal aside from maybe another set piece. And even there, you know, it's not like Liverpool's a bad set piece team. They're actually very good in that area. So, yeah, I don't know. This one's up in the air.
Yeah, well, moving on, shall we look at their neighbours in Madrid and Real Madrid? I mean, obviously another team with a tough Champions League tie against English opposition in Manchester City. But they are leading La Liga. They seem to be the favourites for the title as things stand at the moment. What have we made of Real Madrid so far this season under Zinedine Zidane?
They had a rocky start, but it seems that Zidane is finally starting to, you know, get the team to dance on his tune. And I feel like at the moment they really are the best team in La Liga. Barca is shaky. You got Getafe in the top as well, so they are someone to you know, look out for. But Real Madrid really look pretty good. And to be fair, going to this tie against Manchester City, I kind of see them as favorites, to be honest. I would say that they go through and City just crash out.
Yeah, I mean, if there's one thing we know about Zidane, he can identify the strengths and vulnerabilities of an opponent and pick them apart. So I do think he will find a way to shut down De Bruyne. I think you'll see Carvajal be much more conservative on the right-hand side, try to shut down Sterling. But yeah, I agree. I do see Real Madrid coming out of this and advancing to the quarterfinals. And when you look at this team, the midfield has really been brilliant this year. The progression from start to the current point has just been fantastic to watch. So Casemiro, of course, I think is the most important player on this team. He just shuts down so many opposition attacks. It's just a one-man wrecking crew in the back. Zidane has found a way to really harness the passing ability of Toni Kroos while, you know, accounting for that defensive vulnerability that we had seen over the past couple of years on the left-hand side. And it's really just given the team a whole lot of freedom in the attack. And, you know, I think as this team regains health, as, you know, Hazard regains form, you know, hopefully Bale makes it to the field. This could be a really dangerous team in the stretch.
Yeah, it could be all about, you know, whether Real Madrid can score goals. We know that City are not really the best defensive team out there. But the thing about Real Madrid this season is they've been too reliant on Karim Benzema to score the goals. Which actually brings us to our next point about him actually being the focal point of this team. So what do we think about Benzema this season? Is this the best we ever seen him play, or not?
Yeah, I'd say that Benzema's kind of maybe not the best he's ever been, but very close, if not quite there. You see him kind of really taking up that leadership role in the Real Madrid attack, and it's a role that he thrives on because it gives him that freedom to make some runs, have a bit more movement, and drop deep without kind of being the creator, which is very much the role that he had when Cristiano Ronaldo was there. And it was very clear that Benzema was there kind of as the target man to hold up play, and playing Gareth Bale, playing Cristiano Ronaldo. And now all of a sudden he's been given that freedom to kind of be the one to be running into the box and let the wide players do the work. But even when it's a 4-3-3, it's a very different role for Benzema, and I think he's really thriving on that. I mean, you look at the stats, and I think he's on 0.7 goals per 90, so that's a really impressive record from him so far this season. I mean, he's struggled a bit in the last few weeks, but he has really shown some form, and he's proved the doubters wrong. There are plenty of people who thought that he wasn't good enough, that he was past it, and he's come back last season, this season, and really proved his point. But I mean, I think that's the real change, is since Cristiano Ronaldo's left, how that's affected his role and kind of the position and the influence that he's had.
Yeah, he really does a little bit less of the grunt work. You know, it's still very much involved in the build-up, especially on that left half space. But he's doing a little bit less of the grunt work. And you know, just one thing I've noticed over the past few years, and especially since Cristiano's departure, it's just he's a much more confident player in the box. There was a period, especially during Cristiano's last 2 or 3 years at Real Madrid, where you did get the sense that if Ronaldo wasn't going to finish, Real Madrid probably wasn't going to score many goals that game. But yeah, now that workload has fallen on Benzema, there really isn't the production from the wings that, you know, we've seen from past Real Madrid teams. And, you know, again, I do think a big part of that is due to the injuries that the squad has accumulated. But Benzema is really thriving. And, you know, he's enjoying this role as the focal point of the attack.
Yeah, that's true. But he had a brilliant start of the season. He only didn't score in the 5 of the first 16 games, which is incredible. But then we also see the other side of the coin. He's only scored twice in the last 11 games, I think. So a bit of inconsistency is creeping in. So when he's on form and he's firing all cylinders, he's really doing it. He's really showing off his best qualities. But then when he drops off, when he dips in form just slightly, he can sometimes disappear. And I think that this could be a problem of the whole system and not just Benzema on his own, because Madrid are somehow, they're just relying on him to score. The next best player with the highest XG value is Sergio Ramos, of all people. So I think that there is a problem there in the regard that Benzema maybe needs a Benzema of his own. So, you know, what Benzema was doing for Cristiano Ronaldo back in the day, he needs someone else to do that dirty work for him now that he's the focal point up front. And I feel like maybe Eden Hazard can do that job. You know, maybe he could be the one to kind of link the midfield and attack. Maybe the one to drift in between the lines and provide that assist, maybe the final ball to Benzema and give him the service that he needs. Because we've seen him. He scored 13 goals from, 11.3 XG. That means that he takes his chances. He is putting those chances away. Just needs to get the right service to be able to do that. And now that he's not dropping deep as often, maybe as he was before, he can only grow, I think. We'll see how that pans out.
Yeah, and he's definitely a player who's very dependent on service into the box to get his goals. You know, he's not the Eden Hazard type who can beat a player on the dribble and go finish. Benzema does need service into the box, and I mean, again, you look over that span of 11 games where he only has the 2 goals. Who's missing? Hazard, Bale. So, you know, you've seen Isco play a lot on that left-hand side. Vinicius mixing in every once in a while. And you've got Rodrigo, for the most part, on the right. And, you know, they're not giving Bale the service that he needs. And, you know, I think part of the problem is that, you know, when Isco's in the game, it's a very different approach from when you have Hazard. So when Hazard's in, he will try to find the ball either in the left half space or on the left wing, and he'll look to run at someone and break that first line of pressure and then look to create for someone else. Isco, for the most part, likes to drift into the middle, maybe even to the more central part of the left half space, and, you know, almost play like the true 10 that I really think he is. So the issue there is, you know, that they're not getting those wide services for Benzema. And then also Isco just has not been as direct this season as he has in seasons past. And if it's not coming from Isco, you know, it's probably not coming from this midfield. You know, Modric does do a pretty good job getting forward and helping join the attack, but even he's just not beating defenders as regularly as he has in previous years. So, you know, without that wide outlet who can beat a defender and cause the opposing defense to shift, you know, there's only so many options, and you can only deliver, you know, services of such a quality into the box for Benzema.
Yeah, I think we need a bit more support from Benzema needs a bit more support from those players in more ways than one. I mean, you look at the players in the Real Madrid squad who are overscoring their XG and underscoring their XG, and Benzema and Rodrigo, the young Brazilian, are the only players to overscore their XG from kind of those attackers. But then you're looking at the likes of Bale, the likes of Vinicius, the likes of Isco, and you're thinking kind of that they've got to pull their weight as well. I mean, it's all very good and that Benzema is doing so well and that he's kind of converting the chances and performing well, but he can't do it all by himself. And I mean, that's the issue, I think, for me with the Real Madrid team, is they are kind of dependent on him in attack. And then you look into the midfield, and I mean, there's not too many goals coming from midfield. I mean, Toni Kroos and Luka Modric, they aren't as clinical as they once were. I mean, they chip in with a few goals every now and then, but not too many. Fede Valverde is more of a link-up player, a transition player, rather than one who gets into the box and has shots himself. So I think that's a real challenge for Zinedine Zidane to kind of identify how he resolves that issue.
Yeah, and even with Rodrigo, he actually hasn't scored a La Liga goal since October 30th. So he's actually done a lot of that damage, you know, with the 9 goals in Champions League. I think he has 6. But when you look at La Liga, he has 2 goals on 1.24 XG. So, when he scored, it's been a big game. But there's not the level of consistency needed to be a scoring threat himself, but then also set up Benzema as well. This side does need to find a way to get goals. The set pieces have worked pretty well for them. But they do need Hazard and Bale to return and really bring something to the table.
Yeah, it feels like Zidane could also do a better job of integrating Luka Jovic into the lineup, because Jovic was supposed to be the one who was going to push Benzema, you know, keep him on his toes. Or maybe, I'm not really sure why he's so afraid to try them both on the pitch at the same time. I know we've seen that a couple of times and it hasn't really worked that well. But I feel like that's something that could possibly, you know, have potential to become a good relationship in the future. Because if you look at Ronaldo and Benzema as a partnership, one was always dropping deeper and linking up play, which was usually Benzema. And then Ronaldo would stay up front and just, you know, wait for the dirty work to be done by Benzema, who would, you know, create space for him, drag the markers away or stuff like that. Maybe Jovic and Benzema could also form a partnership that's similar to that, because we know that Benzema likes to drop deep and Jovic likes to drop deep. He used to play in a forward two back when he was at his old team. So maybe this is something that Zidane could explore in the future.
Yeah, one thing that's really impressed me with Jovic, I know he's not scoring, but he's a very willing runner. You know, he is someone who can stretch the lines and really give Benzema the space that he doesn't have right now. For Benzema to get any space and to get on the ball, he does have to drop into the midfield because there's, you know, he's, yeah. So I actually do like that idea of pairing them up and You know, even if you have Jovic starting on one of the two sides, you know, maybe sliding into the half space to open up the wing for an outside back, you know, that could actually be the answer to this block that they've run up against.
Yeah, exactly. And as for the midfield, I feel like Zidane is playing without a proper attacking midfielder. Usually he just deployed this trident in the field. I mean, we've seen him play with five midfielders as well, but usually it's three, and they all have like different roles, but none of them are really attacking minded, I would say. A number 10 would actually be someone who would effectively, you know, on paper, effectively link that midfield and attack and help them create more chances. So think of Isco back in the day, or James Rodriguez maybe, or even maybe Martin Odegaard in the near future.
Yeah, which kind of is the perfect link on to our next point, which is all about Odegaard and how he's performing kind of out on loan at Real Sociedad, where he's been one of the revelations of La Liga this season. I mean, after his spells in Holland, nobody expected him to be quite as sensational as he has been at Real Sociedad. I mean, what about you guys? Do you think that, have you been surprised by his performances?
Well, surprise would be a strong word. I mean, we always knew, all of us knew that he had talent, that he was extremely, his potential was sky high. For one reason or the other, it just hasn't worked out for him in the past. But now that he is at La Real, he just blew up. He just exploded. And we're finally seeing what he's capable of doing. And I feel like he's changed so much since we've, you know, seen his previous stints back in Holland and on those various loans. And I feel like he's finally becoming the player that he was always supposed to be, you know, that next Galacticos, the next player to maybe lead Real midfield. He's really transformed, and I'm loving him this season. I mean, he's been one of the standout performers among the young players, definitely.
Yeah, and I mean, he's definitely the creative type that I think Real Madrid could use in their midfield. You know, whether Zidane wants a more creative in the midfield is another question. So, you know, you look at the current squad and you ask the question, so if you need more of an attacking threat in the midfield and, you know, maybe more true wingers, why not have Vinicius start on the left, drop Isco to that 10 role, and, you know, have Modric come off the bench. But he hasn't really gone to that system. Real Madrid is actually at their worst when James is on their field. I think they've dropped the most points or the most results when they do have that creative outlet in the midfield. So Zidane definitely wants to be a little more functional in the midfield and short up. So there is a question of whether Odegaard does fit that role, or if they create one for him. Maybe there's a tactical switch. But you know, if I'm Zidane, I've got to find a way to incorporate Odegaard into this team next season. He's just been phenomenal. He's leading Sociedad's charge into Champions League contention. You know, whether they can claim that fourth spot's another issue, but they've just been such a dynamic attacking team, and they really have that directness in the attack that Real Madrid lack. And for the most part, you do see that play coming through Odegaard. So he's been a lot of fun to watch. He's brilliant off the ball. He's always scanning the field, trying to find little pockets of space, maximize his time and space on the ball. And he just finds a way to give himself the time and space to apply the proper technique to get the ball to a dangerous target. So it's been a really impressive year for him, Odegaard.
And DK, I know that you covered it for the TFA Magazine of the Year for 2020, but where do you think that Odegaard could fit in at Real Madrid? I mean, what kind of role do you see him taking up?
Well, that's an interesting question. I mean, as a whole, I would say that there are three general options for Zidane. If he doesn't want to tamper with the system too much, if he wants to stick with his tried and trusted 4-3-3 system, it would be either stick him to the wing, you know, to the right side, and then have him like cut inside and let the fullbacks overlap. That would be like the easiest way to do it. But I feel like Odegaard has somewhat transitioned from that winger role to being like an advanced playmaker from the middle of the pitch, or maybe a true number 10, if you will. So he likes to have that free roam across the final third, and even the license to drop deep when he sees fit. I feel like if Zidane was to switch his system to a 4-4-2 diamond, and then put Odegaard in at that tip of the diamond, you know, at the number 10 role, I feel like that would potentially be the best one for him, the one in which he would feel at home, like his natural spot on the pitch, and then maybe put Hazard and Benzema up front, and then have Odegaard like be that link, be that man to provide the final ball and provide the service that, you know, that both of them need. I mean, many people have said in the past that Odegaard will be a long-term Modric replacement. To be completely honest with you, at the moment, I just don't see him in that role just yet, because Modric is a bit of a Swiss knife for Madrid, or he used to be. I mean, as he's getting older, he's not really as effective as he was before, but he was just, you know, Zidane would put him anywhere in the pitch. At one point, he was playing right back as well, so... Modric is the kind of player that can plug a lot of holes across the pitch. He can work both ways. He can put in a defensive shift, an offensive shift. And while Odegaard is extremely talented and potent going forward, and he does his part in the defensive system, Real Sociedad love to press high, and Odegaard is often the one to initiate the press to cut the passing lanes and snatch the ball away in the position's third. But I just don't see him as that full workhorse that Modric can be when necessary. So it's going to take some tweaking of the system, I feel, from Zidane. And if he really wants to find a way for you know, to squeeze Odegaard into the team, I think he'll have to change a few things, and either sacrifice a forward, or just drop one of the midfielders for Odegaard. I'm not really sure how he's going to do that, or if he's willing to do that, but. He definitely has to, because the talent is there. The potential is just too high for him to miss out on him. But that brings us to another question. Should Odegaard stay for another season at Sociedad, or should he, if given the chance, should he return to Real Madrid from next summer even?
Yeah, I mean, I think it might be a decent idea for him to stay at Real Sociedad. I mean, he's kind of showing what he can do there. He's very comfortable. He's one of the leaders in the team, and it's clear that Imanolo Guardiola has given him kind of that role, and it's one that he can kind of have a bit more influence over the team, and he knows that he's going to be in that position that he likes, that he feels most natural in. And so, especially if Real Sociedad qualify for Europe this season, then I think it'll be a really interesting decision for him. If I were him, I think I'd be quite tempted to stay there up in the Basque country and kind of really establish himself, prove that he's not just a one season wonder, so to speak, and to kind of build on that season, look to do it in Europe as well, and then come back to Real Madrid, kind of a proven figure who there's no way that anybody can argue against, including him. I mean, you've got to think as well that another year on, we might see a very different Toni Kroos, a very different Luka Modric as they both get older, and then that's going to open up a midfield slot for him. So I think a lot of it will have to do with what Real Madrid have planned with their transfer business. I mean, if there's the chance that they might sign somebody like Paul Pogba or bring in another midfielder, then maybe he would be better off coming back before they do that to stake his claim. But otherwise, I think for his development, it might well be best for him to stay at Real Sociedad.
Yeah, that system really seems to fit him well. Plays to his key strengths. You know, his vision passing the ball, the freedom of movement and the attack. The fact that they are a little more direct. So it is a really good fit for him. And unless there's a very clear role for him back in Madrid, there's really no reason for him to cut this loan short. You know, if he's willing to fit that Modric role, maybe sacrifice a little bit of the creativity to be a two-way player, you know, maybe it works out in Madrid. The other issue, I don't necessarily see Toni Kroos going anywhere anytime soon. Real Madrid faces a low block so often. You kind of need a player like Kroos who can play over, you know, those, you know, that low block. So, and with his style of play, he can definitely sustain a high level of play at Real Madrid for, you know, another 3-4 years. You know, almost you know, like a Pirlo at Juventus, those kinds of expectations. So if Zidane wanted to, he probably could find a way to incorporate Odegaard. You know, if you need something, you know, a little more defensive security, maybe you have Valverde and Casemiro starting side by side, Odegaard at the top of that point. But yeah, either way, there's going to be a little bit of transition, whether it's for Madrid or for Odegaard, to make that relationship work next year. But you know, if they do have any plans to bring midfielders in, I hope it is just bring Odegaard back from loan rather than going out and buying a Pogba or some other player who's really not going to give them a whole lot more than what they already have. Yeah, you know, I just don't see any reason for that level of spending.
Yeah, no, I think that'll definitely come into play as well with the financial factors. And I mean, from what we've seen in the press of late, I mean, Marca in particular saying that Zidane wants Pogba or nobody, and if he can't get Pogba this summer, then maybe that'll be the case. And it might open the door for Odegaard to come in and have that role very clearly defined. But I think there is kind of that opportunity. It's just whether it comes this year or next year for Odegaard. And I think really for him, it might even suit him better if it wasn't under Zidane, just because of the system that Zidane likes and the fact that he doesn't particularly fit in there naturally. He might be better suited to a different kind of setup, but I definitely think it'll be an interesting summer to see exactly what happens with Odegaard. So should we move on to another team who are really impressing, maybe surprising even more than Odegaard's performances, and that's Getafe. I mean, Scott, you wrote an article on them recently. Do you want to fill us in a bit kind of on the background of Getafe and what they're achieving this season?
Yeah, sure. This is, you know, when you look at the squad, you try to identify who they're keeping, who the superstars are. Like, they're just not built that way. This is a team that really relies on a collective mentality. There's just a toughness in the way that they go about their business, where there's just an unwillingness to be beat. They're one of the top pressing teams in Spain. In fact, actually, in all of Europe, they are among the leaders in pressing. So, you know, this is not a team that's going to go away anytime soon. If you do manage to beat the counter press, and then you've got to beat their high press. And if you do that, they're going to foul you. So there are no clear chances on goal. You are not going to run at their back line. This is a very old school team, and it's really enjoying, I'm really enjoying watching them kind of use that old school 4-4-2 with that diamond midfield and just really, really go after teams. So, it all starts with the defense. Like I said, the counter pressing is among the best in Europe. So they're averaging 7.09 passes per defensive action. They lead the league in fouls. They lead the league in yellow cards. And then they're easily the top team in La Liga in shots against, with only 159 shots allowed. So if you get into that Getafe box, you better finish, because you are not going to have many opportunities. So that defensive approach is really the backbone of this club. You know, as they attack, it is typically a little more vertical, a little bit more direct. They're looking for that quick strike, and you know, for the most part, they'll have a couple of, you know, bigger targets up top looking to play off of each other. And you know, if the running behind is there, that's great. But they've also got a very committed midfield that's willing to make the run in behind, win the second ball, and run at the back line. Overall, you know, this is not a team that's going to finesse you to death. They only average 43.6% possession per game. That's 18th in La Liga. And ultimately, they don't get a lot of shots either. But when they do get their shots, they're very high quality, and they've got several lethal finishers on the team.
Yeah, that was definitely the key is, and basically the defensive solidity. They have that, like, this perfect blend of high pressing and compact discipline. So when they do press, they just do it smartly, you know, with a tight mirroring system. They collapse really quickly and really well on the opposition. As you said, they've been so aggressive. They are the best pressing team in La Liga. And it's just a matter of somehow being consistent enough throughout the season to just keep where they are right now. So they have an interesting thing. They basically play with double fullbacks on each side. So, but it's not, it sounds overly defensive, but it's at times it's not. They can use them well in attacking transitions as well. As you've said, Scott, they do have runners who will chase those balls in behind the defense. It's been working, and they are third in La Liga, and they're really enjoying their football right now. And everyone isn't actually enjoying this Cinderella story. But do we see them maintaining this throughout? No, I mean, until the end of the season, or is the inevitable going to happen and they're going to fall off?
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of the logical thing, isn't it? When you look at their squad and they don't have too many young players, the average age of a player in their team is 28.6, and their strikers, Jaime Mata, Angel and Jorge Molina, are all over 30. And then you've only got one defender who's under the age of 28. So, I mean, you look at it like that and you think, how is this team keeping up this intensity, this pressing, this tactical structure? I mean, how are they not getting worn out? And then they've got Europa League fixtures on top of that. And you wonder, how on earth are they sustaining this after the success of last season, having done well the season before? You're just waiting for that burnout point to come, but it just doesn't come. I mean, Pepe Guardiola has been quite clever in how he's rotated his team and kind of rotated the three strikers to avoid any of them getting too worn out. I mean, Angel has set a joint record in La Liga for the most number of goals from a substitute. I think it's 8 goals that he's scored so far this season. Of 10 of them in total, and 8 of them have been as a sub. So it's really impressive return from him. And it kind of gives Guardiola that option to rotate his squad and keep them fresh and to try and maintain this form for as long as they can. It'll be intriguing to see if they can keep it up, if they do go further in the Europa League particularly and have all those fixtures coming thick and fast, because they didn't last long in the Copa del Rey and it wasn't a big deal. But if they can do well in the Europa League and do well in La Liga, I mean, they're in that race for the top four. It'll be intriguing to see kind of how they can do that. And then looking forward to next season, I mean, if they have the funds to invest to really prepare themselves to consolidate and to make themselves regular contenders for the top four.
Yeah, you know, fortunately for this side, and Sam, I think you're exactly right that their form over these last few months will really depend on how they manage the Europa League, if they can avoid injuries. But at the very least, like, what youth they do have, it's at least in the right places. So, you know, this is not a back line that is very committed to the attack. And, you know, there's really no point for the outside backs to be that involved because it is so direct. It is such a quick strike attack. But when you look at the guys who are doing a lot of the running, they are those young midfielders. You know, Cucurella is only 21. Maximovic is 25. Arambari is only 24. So they, at the very least, they do have some legs in those critical positions. So, you know, those guys who are running onto the second balls, they can at least have the legs to recover their position pretty quickly. And, you know, ultimately, when you look at this team, you know, most of their attacks that culminate in goals, they are coming from very short possessions. They are dependent on those midfielders getting high. So, you know, I think if they can keep their health there, keep their legs, if those young midfielders don't get burnt out, you know, they've definitely got a chance to clinch a Champions League spot. You know, it certainly won't be easy. But when you look at this side's record thus far, you know, in the second half of the season, the only team that they've actually lost to in that second game is Barcelona. So that was the first game where they've actually dropped a result in their second appearance against another team in La Liga. So I think Borealis is a very intelligent manager. He can find the weaknesses in the opponents. And at the very least, he'll give the side a fighting chance.
Yeah, and it could be interesting to see where Bordalas ends up. Because, I mean, you look at how he's doing with Etapa, and you have to wonder, surely a big team will come in for him at some point. But with his kind of philosophy, his tactics, it's not going to be a Barcelona or a Real Madrid. So then who could it be? I mean, it could be an Atletico Madrid maybe, but Diego Simeone isn't going to go anywhere. Maybe a Valencia, but then obviously Getafe have quite a history with Valencia, and it's not likely that he'd be too welcome there. But I mean, he's definitely a coach who's worked wonders with Getafe. I mean, when he took over, they were near the bottom of Segunda División, so to climb up the league table, get promoted, and then take his team to the Champions League spots, I mean, it's a really magnificent achievement, and they're kind of leading the way in all of the things that kind of form his philosophy. I mean, no team has fewer shots against them in La Liga, and they lead the way in challenge intensity as well. So he's kind of made his team the very best at what he wants his team to do.
It's always interesting when you see a player or a coach who was formerly a forward who has an ultra-defensive style, and a defender who then becomes a coach with a very attack-oriented side. It's really interesting. But yeah, Bordalas, he definitely fits that mold of your classic Atletico or even Chelsea coach. Very defensive-minded. but, maybe this is a product of what he has with this squad. It's not a big club. They don't have the money to spend. But yeah, he's done a brilliant job with what he does have at his disposal.
That's usually the fate of all the smaller clubs that want to overachieve, isn't it? Like you either go guns blazing like the Rayo of old, or you just turtle up and you soak up the pressure and just frustrate your opponent by defending real deep and compact. So we'll see if he can keep it up. I mean, I would definitely. It's great for the league. Having a Getafe, so let's hope it continues.
Well, and I mean, looking at the league, if Getafe don't hold on to this spot, they fall out of the Champions League. You can ask who's going to take that spot, because they did recently just absolutely obliterate. I think Valencia's XG was 0.07, and I think that came at the very end in. Like an 85th minute Kondogbia shot from outside of the box. So it's just a spectacular performance. But yeah, really big game against Sevilla this weekend. If they can get the win against Sevilla, I'm going to stick with Getafe running away with this spot. The only other team that I could see them catching them would be maybe Villarreal.
Yeah, I mean, there's plenty of teams who are out of form. I mean, Sevilla being one of them. So how about we discuss that next week in the next installment of Total Football Analysis' La Liga podcast. Thanks very much for joining us, guys. You can follow us all on Twitter. I'm at Sam Leverage, DK at Barca Front, and Scott at Coach Scott Coppy. Make sure that you tune in for our next podcast. And in the meantime, you can keep an eye on all of the match analysis, player analysis, coach analysis, team analysis, all of the analysis at totalfootballanalysis.com. Thanks for listening.